What's happening, guys? Happy Tuesday, and thank you for joining another special episode of Your Welcome. October is a big month for combat sports. We've got an Abu Dhabi card, Francis Ngannou's PFL debut, and of course, UFC 307. That's this Saturday, and coming up on today's episode, I'm going to break down some of that card, plus from the weekend, all of the beautiful things that happened. Guys, speaking of which, let's begin with that. Moicano's next fight is Justin Gaethje. Now, that is exactly what my response would be. And for me, that's like glaringly obvious. Though I must admit, I don't know why. I mean, why would that be obvious? Why would that be the go-to fight? Like, there is nothing that Dustin Poirier is unwilling to do. It's important that you know that. So many people will play the golden rule of life of putting themselves in somebody else's shoes. Like when they predict, oh, he wouldn't do that, or oh, he wouldn't do that fight, or oh, he doesn't want that fight. What they're just saying, if I was in his spot, I wouldn't want it. So many people would say, oh, he won't do the fight. He can't beat him. Okay, yeah, but there's other people that will do things, and they don't have to be assured victory, right? They're called competitors and fighters, and they will go out and try and do what they can do instead of thinking about what they're not going to do. And I'm only suggesting that if Dustin is in fact going out, if he's got one last fight, that has to be treated just right. And you only have a couple of options. Now, the general rule of the business is that you get nice and shined up and nice and bright as you possibly can. You get over with the audience. You use the tools and the mechanisms of the marketing and production, everything else that the company has. But before you leave, you pass all of that to somebody else, called passing the torch. And some guys are too good. Nobody could take the torch. Georges St-Pierre tried to give that torch away multiple times. Nobody could take it from him, just for example. But that would be one of your ideas. I can take Dustin and I can put him in there with, in this case, Moicano. And Dustin is saying goodbye and Moicano shined up. And now I can use Moicano for anything I want, for main events or for title fights. He would be built up and he would be ready. But you would always also run the risk that Moicano doesn't take that torch, same as Georges St-Pierre didn't let go of that thing. And it just creates a little bit of a harder spot. When that guy goes out on top, what do I do? Or you could find yourself in a different situation where you found another legend that maybe is in a similar spot. That is very rare. In fact, it's rare to the point that I can't offer you an example of a time that it's happened. I can't offer you two stars, absolute stars, they're going to fight. And prior to the fight, they both agree, if I lose, I retire. If I win, I retire. I can't remember that time. But Dustin is in a unique spot. And I'm only bringing him to you as a name, as a suggestion. And I think that you would agree with me. If you got over on Dustin Poirier, you could then do anything. Fight from titles, main events. There'd be no argument that you couldn't fit nicely into. And Justin Gaethje brings those same accolades. But there's one difference, which is you don't have to be as careful with the bookings of Gaethje because he is not in a situation where he's saying my next one is my final one. Moicano turns out to be a heck of a lot better than we knew that he was. But he also turns out to be more of a veteran than we knew that he was. I thought Moicano was mid-20s. I thought he was just kind of getting his career going. He did an interview where he said that he's been in the UFC for 10 years and wasn't discovered until 3 years ago. Okay, great. Well, I was one of those guys. I didn't know about those previous seven. No problem. Just turns out he's not the spring chicken that I thought he was. Leads me to looking up his age. Find out he's 36 years old. And that's where you start to understand, hey, the clock is ticking. We've got to go. We've got something here that's hot. But the wonderful hand, right? The wonderful bird in the hand that you have with Moicano is you have somebody who wants to be busy. We do not see a lot of that. We see guys wanting breaks and wanting time off, and I just don't understand it myself. I do not get it. You got to go get those matches when you can get them. Oh, and by the way, get them done with. Get the hell out of that business. Get yourself a nacho and enjoy watching the sport. I just share for you, right? If the numbers are going to be the same, I'm going to do X amount of fights and I can get them in quickly and make this much money, or I can drag it out. It's one of those spots that when you have somebody like Moicano, who's red hot right now, But he also knows there's no time to waste. He's ready to go. I think it puts him in a very great spot. If Moicano does not fight for and or have a title by the time he's 39. And I bring that up because he's 36 now. By the time, I only discovered him 3 years ago. It feels like I just discovered him, that he was in there with RDA. It feels like that, but the reality was that was a little shy of 3 years ago. So if we do that again, if we do that same thing again, not getting a title shot at 39. Going to have a hard enough time getting one at 36. Not going to get one at 37 or 38 either, for that matter. It doesn't matter if he wins all of his fights until then. He's not getting a title shot at 38 years old. So it's a situation of, well, let's get on with it. He sees it the same way as I do. And I do think that Justin Gaethje is one of those really great matchups for the same reasons of Poirier. If you get the jump on him, you could go anywhere. You can move up the card, be used in that capacity. You could go into title fights, be in that capacity, become backup fighter. I mean, there's just a number of things and spots that open up. So when Cano has spoke about Paddy the Batty, and that's not new. That's not because Paddy's red hot or because Paddy's coming off such a great win over Bobby Green. Moicano and Paddy were trying to find each other. And by the way, it was Paddy's idea, just to remind you guys. Paddy's the one that came after Moicano. And then Green came after Paddy. The UFC made their decision. You saw Green and Paddy. But Paddy's not as young as you think either. He's not that new kid, 19, 22, either. That's not the matchup I love the most, and that isn't for the X's and O's or the rankings. It's the personalities. You have two great heels. You have two popular heels. It's a very rare thing. There is nothing more monetizable than a cool heel. You don't see it much. The Rock, Austin, for examples. There is nothing that prints money more from an entertainment standpoint, from a rating standpoint, from a merchandising standpoint, than a cool heel. Paddy McConnell both fit that, keep them apart, is my thought. Moicano tried to align himself with Dan Hooker. If Dan fires back and likes that idea, all of a sudden, hey, we got a really great direction. But before we get to that, we could be forced into doing that fight, right? Based on what Hooker thinks. So we could be forced into that. But before we get there, don't I make sense? Don't it make sense when I'm telling you to look at Dustin and Justin, and both are great answers, but I believe that Justin is the correct one? Doesn't that seem like even Gaethje would likely see it that same way? Gaethje was a champion going into his very last match, which was the most sought-after match of what, at least in theory, was the biggest card of all time, right? I mean, this guy's a straight-up hammer. Doesn't matter if he's coming off a defeat and the guy's coming off a victory. That match makes sense. Justin's got the rankings. He's got the support. He's got a lot of things. He'd like to get back on track. That match would do it. I don't know who would beat each other. I don't even know who the favorite would be going to that fight. And that seems like the kinds of things you'd be looking for to make a fight. I'm going to stand with it. I want to hear what you think about that and what you would change. But I'm going to go with Moicano versus Gaethje next. It last week, I gotta tell you, and I don't know how much of this is my fault. Okay, I got very deviated from MMA last week because there wasn't a lot of MMA to discuss last week. Did you guys feel the same way? I wasn't the only one. I go to the dirt sheets, I go to Ariel's new vertical, and I go to the manias and the elbows. There wasn't a lot going on, so it turned out. There's 17,000 people, a sold-out show, 5 days in advance, I might add, for a record gate. Why did nobody tell us this? Really? How would I not have known that? And, I mean, but what a treat this was, guys. Do I get any wrestling fans here? Do you guys remember Saturday night's main event? This came up somehow at my house. My son was asking me, what was Saturday night's main event? Came up on something on his YouTube. But do you guys recall that? So the way that would work is NBC, and it would be at the same day and time as Saturday Night Live. The most watched show in the country. 11:30 time slot, Saturday nights. That's where I'm at, Pacific time. And every now and then, without warning, it would be Saturday night's main event, as opposed to Saturday Night Live. But it was a massive deal in the wrestling world. Professional wrestling only did what's known as squash matches. So Saturday morning wrestling, you'd recognize one guy like Big John Studd, for example, but he would be taking on some local jobber that wasn't even on the roster, and that guy only got brought in to put Studd over. You never would see, like, Studd versus Bundy. You would never see two guys in the same match against each other that you knew. That just wasn't the wrestling business. Saturday Night's Live, that's all that you would get. You would just get these big star matches. It was awesome. And when I talk about there was no way to warn people back then and you didn't know, just every now and then on a Saturday, it would pop up. Like, there was no internet back then. There was no social media. Like, there really wasn't much of a way to let people know. And I'm just noticing this shift within our industry. Like, I was such a supporter when the UFC got the Apex. And I was such a supporter because this is what other shows do, right? Let me just go back to Saturday Night Live. As big as that show was, or I could switch it over to Cheers, Cosby, I could bring Seinfeld and Friends into it for more recent examples. They have a set. They're not just doing national business and getting national exposure. They're doing international business with international exposure, but they still have somewhere that they report to each day. And that was very different. The UFC felt early on they needed to go on the road. That is how you got the local media, thus the local fighters. That is how you build different markets and you build a business. Dana's laid that out a number of times. And yes, that very clearly was working. That was what their model was, that was growing. I just had my own personal opinion of, yeah, but the cameras come in. I don't know about this whole idea. I don't know about this idea of packing up and playing the venue game and leasing things and saying goodbye one night and then you're in a different town. I don't know about that. Why not cut down on costs and everybody comes to you? It's just a thought, but the Apex, and I loved it. There were such great matches there. Francis Ngannou became champion of the world there, for example. Stipe Miocic defended the championship of the world, and Daniel Cormier, the great, retired in that building. Like, there was starting to build a massive history was starting to be in this one little location that used to be a bump of sand in the desert. I mean, it was an incredible thing that this was turning into. Fighters did not agree with me. Fighters would even start doing media and talking about and putting down the Apex. They didn't want to be there. They wanted to be somewhere where there was already an established history, where Mike Tyson had once fought. They wanted to be in front of thousands upon thousands of people. I understood it from both sides. But there was a stigma within our sport, and there was an accuracy to it. That those events and those shows were something different. They were Contender Series. They were Ultimate Fighter. Like, they're really close, and it's sort of what I was talking about, but that's not really quite what my dream was. And I was fascinated just from the business side of it, of not having to play a venue game and having an established location. But I will share, it seemed as though anything that was not a pay-per-view was something very different. Anything that was on ESPN, 1, 2, ESPN Plus, any way you want to do it. Go back to the Facebook days, go back to Fight Pass, any way you want to do it. It felt like, but that's close, but it's not the same thing. And there is a fairness to that. Like, a sold out venue and ESPN Plus on a Saturday on a non-pay-per-view. They did not go hand in hand. So this new thing, and Danny keeps talking about, no, we're growing, we got a vision, we got a plan. Ah, you want to invest, come invest. I haven't even started yet. And other people will always push back and go, well, I wish I would have invested early on, but I can't do that now. You don't have anywhere to go. And Danny's like, man, I haven't even started. And you always wondered, what is he talking about? Like, you're confined to the limits of your own imagination. Okay, if I was in his spot, I had a magic wand, I could do it, but what would I do? And you get lost in there, you get stuck. Well, one answer was, instead of putting out content on Saturdays for my distribution partner of ESPN, there's another side of the business, which is the live gate and the merchandising and everything that comes with that. And I'm going to build a roster as such that I can do that for these shows that used to be viewed to a degree, they were viewed as a lesser product. And it just reminds me very much of Saturday Night Main Event, which you could not get these two stars. You couldn't get the lights and the cameras. You couldn't get sold out arenas unless it was a pay-per-view, but you could not get that on free TV. And I'm just looking at it. It's a massively different time. I don't know where I would instruct my fighters to go if I was a manager. Like, it's a very interesting time. I mean, I will submit for you. Yes, there's many politics in this sport. Nobody will ever admit to them. But sometimes that's because the decision maker himself doesn't even know he's doing it. Sometimes it's subconsciously. I believe part of the part that you're seeing Khalil Roundtree is because of the built-in belief that a non-pay-per-view it's put over here. In Apex, it's put over here. It's not the same thing. And I believe the UFC, whether subconsciously or not, let's let the roster and world know. UFC's UFC. Wherever you're doing it, if you're doing what we ask you to do, you will be treated, you will be elevated the same. I mean, that's kind of what it felt like. When they brought Khalil and they put him in here, it felt like Khalil wasn't part of the UFC, of the main roster. It felt like he was on this second, he's kind of doing his own thing. He's over here. And I felt like the UFC was letting everybody know. No. He's on 6 in a row. He's on 5 by finish. And we're all the same thing. Study the whole roster. Look at them all. And I tell you that because now you got a guy like Moicano. So Moicano, you have a pay-per-view draw. This is a proven attraction. A brand new and out of nowhere. Who possibly would have thought this guy was going to be a attraction, period. And he's proving that time and time again on pay-per-view. In sold-out arenas. UFC 300 comes to mind. And all of a sudden, you see him put over here. Now, on one hand, he's elevated. He goes to main event. There's nowhere higher you can go to main event unless you're a title fight. There's nowhere higher you can go. But he got pulled off of pay-per-view. And so how do you interpret that and how do you look at it? Well, now that we know what we're looking at, we don't look at any different. The conversation doesn't even exist. 17,000? Sold out 5 days in advance. They don't put out an article on this. They don't put out a headline that this show is completely sold out. You're going to have to watch it on television. How was this missed? A record gate for the industry for that venue. This doesn't get talked about. This turns into a massive thing. I'm not convinced that Moy Connell's not one away from fighting for a title. That would be a little fast. And I'm not quite making a prediction for you, but I'm not convinced that he's not. It's the same problem you run in with Khalil Roundtree. You work him up a card, you main event him, he starts winning in impressive fashion. You're telling him he's fight of the night, you're telling him he's finishing, guys. Well, it's a promotion. That's the deal. Promotion, it goes one way. The other word is called demotion. So what do you do with Khalil? You got to put him in for the world title. And the same thing is going to happen to Moicano. Now, he could be two fights away. I understand there's a conversation, that's because there's some wonderful guys, but I'm not convinced that he's not one fight away. Would anybody care to disagree with me? It's official. We are in fall. Guys, it is the busiest and best time of the year for team sports and sports fans. Look, you got the NFL. You got college football. You got NHL and MLB postseason. Don't be left out of the season by trying to run your e-commerce business all on your own. Let me introduce you to the perfect teammate, Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret that with Shop Pay, you can boost conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts are going abandoned and you're going to get more sales. Businesses that sell more simply sell on Shopify. We use Shopify over here at Bad Guy Inc. All of our merchandise, and it will not disappoint you. I want you to upgrade your business. I want you to sign up for a $1 per month trial period at Shopify.com/Chael. That's Shopify.com/Chael, all lowercase. Go to Shopify.com/Chael to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/Chael. Brian Battle comes out, and he comes out to a song, and I'm not holding back on you. I'm not saying this like as a way of holding back, right? This is actually the name. N-Word in Paris. That's the name of the song. Okay, Relevant. Walks out to that. Has his fight, which is sheer entertainment, by the way. Gets a microphone after the fact, and evokes an emotion from the audience. He fully did his job. But then a rumor started. And this was put out by Spinning Back Fist. I gotta say, I mean, Journalism 101, I'm not a journalist, but Journalism 101, make a statement, cite your source. So the way they tell it is that there is a $250,000 fine for Brian Battle and a suspension for the walkout song and what he had to say after the fight. Now, I got to disclose it this way because I have not been able to confirm that beyond that. And when I heard from Brian Battle's people, they were traveling, right? It was an international flight. They were traveling yesterday. So we couldn't get service and quite get in touch with each other. But I fear it's true. As a matter of fact, the only thing that would make me question if it's true is, which is makes it nothing more than a guess, but that it was Sunday, right? Commissions don't generally work on a Sunday. For something like that to come down on a Sunday was the only part that I don't know. I don't know how good this information is, as much as a threat or showing something with the bylaws or showing you, hey, what we could do as a way of kind of telling you for the future. But that's a pretty good source. And those details are pretty specific. $250,000, that's a specific amount. Reason, because of the walkout song, which happened to be called N-Word in Paris. What he said afterwards, which definitely did evoke an emotion. Like there was a lot of details on that. And the fact that when I heard back from Brian Battle's people, it was to let me know, hey, no, I'm not with him, but just so you can expect, you know, he doesn't land until tomorrow. Like, why wouldn't you just tell me no? Or tell me yes. I mean, it's just one of these things where it's an interesting rumor, and I hope it isn't true, because you have an entertainer. And generally speaking, the sponsors and the commission can see through the entertainment, generally speaking, but not all of the time. I can just personalize that twice. I was supposed to do, or I was offered to do, The Ultimate Fighter with Michael Bisping. It ended up being Mayhem Miller versus Bisping. And I don't think I've ever told you guys this story, but there was an appearance of, hey, where did that come from? Where did Mayhem and Bisping ever have heat to get to this point? And so just to share that, I could not get licensed in Nevada, and I even fly in to have a private meeting. The UFC believed, okay, we have entertainment. They haven't quite seen this before. If they meet him, they'll get it, and that is not how it ended. It ended with a very bizarre statement of, he is setting an example for kids. And this apparently not an example that he thought was good, this gentleman. But I had to face that again. I was going to end up being against Shogun. Shogun in Massachusetts. And we had to lawyer up and go before the Massachusetts Commission for the very same reason of, here is what he has said in the past, which you must understand, more of what you didn't say. And then no violence, no profanity, nothing along these lines. And it almost seems like if you're not doing violence and you're not doing profanity, whatever you said, I can stop you right there. If it was not in question of that, I'm not even going to look into suspension of a privilege license. And the commission, when they heard this, essentially laughed and dismissed it instantly. They did a great job in Massachusetts, but it still had to be dealt with. So I can't just dismiss it. And the psychology of it is far more interesting than the events themselves. The psychology of, first off, I just don't know how the fighter, even if he picked the walkouts, I don't know how he would be held liable for it. I mean, it seems like there would be an investigation. Let's just say somewhere in the world had a problem with walkout songs. Before you stuck a $250,000 fine on a fighter, did he play the song? I mean, is he the one that put, I mean, you'd have an investigation. Okay, well, did he request it? Did he turn it in? Like, does he even have anything to do with it, or does a wrong song get played? That's all I'm suggesting. I know that's not what happened, but what I'm suggesting is before a government agency would make a decision and invoke some kind of an action, they would do a small amount of due diligence. And then, by the way, at the same time that they issued the disciplinary action, they would state very clearly what within their bylaws gave them the authority to do that. Okay, great. That was one of the things listed. And then you have the post-fight interview. And you have a gentleman who had a job to entertain. Now, there is nothing that is better from a live audience perspective than if you can get them to participate. Generally, you can do that two ways, which is the cheers or the boos. But for the real greats, right? I'm talking about the real greats. I'm talking about the Stone Cold Steve Austins, the Dwayne The Rock Johnsons. They'll get them to chant. They'll get them to come along. They'll get them to say what they're saying on cue. And there's just simply nothing better you could do for an audience. So when Brian Battle goes out and he evokes an emotion and gets a reaction, physical and verbal, from the sounds they're making, but also physically, they're standing on their feet. He has now done his job. And you would have to come back to, well, okay, great, but that can't be the only litmus test. How did he do it? Was there any threats? Was there profanity? Once you start to break down, no, then let me just stop you right there. We don't need to now go on to what he did do. If we've established he did not do violence, profanity, we get up and we leave the room. So I want to see where that goes. And I also don't want Brian Battle to be discouraged. I don't want him to hear that or think that he has done something wrong. He put on an excellent fight. He put on an excellent post-fight. And there's ways to know who won over the weekend. A lot of people would love to have a conversation of, well, whose stock went up the most from Saturday? And you can share your opinion, but like so many other things, it just turns into a popularity contest and it's personalized to you of who did you like the most. But there is actually metrics that you go off of. The appropriate metrics, which is in the 72 hours following the event. So the first place that will start is the post-fight press conference. Then that will go until Tuesday of the next week, which is by Tuesday afternoon. Whatever was done is now actually done, and we move and spin things forward for what's coming up following Saturday. And whoever got the most headline, the most attractions, created the most stories that made it to the market, that's whose stock went up the most. That is who won. And that's what Brian Battle did. He should be given a pat on the back. He could be given a boo. You don't have to like him to like what he did. He had a job that he accepted, which involved him entertaining you. And most fighters will only have the performance as the commodity that they can monetize. But there are a few others. Moicano, Sean O'Malley, Colby, Henry, Adesanya, there's only a few that will find a way to monetize and entertain in other aspects of the arts. That is not something you ridicule. That is something you celebrate. If John Jones doesn't fight in November against Stipe, would Stipe accept a fight Tom Aspinall? And what an important question, right? Like, we haven't totally considered it from that standpoint, but very realistic. And would he? Anthony Smith waited on that. And one thing that Anthony did not disclose, but I think that you guys should know, is Anthony and Stipe are very tight. Share the same manager. Like, if Anthony told you something about Stipe, it would be more than an opinion. It would essentially be the answer, right? Okay. And I only say that because Anthony almost was surprised he was being asked. Of course he would. Said in detail, Stipe's a regular guy. The only time he's focused and zeroed in on fighting is when he's fighting. He goes to practice every day, but he doesn't live in this. He has a wife and he's got a family and he's got a job, and you guys are well aware of the fire department, but he doesn't live in this. He's not clinging to John specifically. So that's the take and that's the answer. But, I mean, wouldn't that be something? If John somehow, because all of the narrative, I even had to speak to this, is some built-in idea that Stipe is not going to show, and almost that that's a foregone conclusion. They're getting ready to make the announcement of Aspinall and John. I keep hearing this. I keep feeling it all around me. Go, where's this even coming from? But wouldn't that be something? What if it was Stipe and Aspinall? First off, what if it's not? Well, if it's not, then I guess we're going to essentially play the same game with John and Stipe that we did with Tony and Khabib, or that we did more recently with Chandler and Connor. And we're just going to keep on spending time as opposed to following the golden rule of show business, which is the show must go on. And it does change things, though. Like, once you've already done it once, once you've already waited once, once you've I've already gone through this and I waited this long, perhaps it's easier to do that again. Interesting spot, right? I mean, somebody like Michael Chandler would have to come in and share this psychology with us because it hasn't been done many times. Where the promotion itself is willing to go, okay, what do you guys want to do? Chandler, you want to do something else? No? Okay, Connor, don't have you? Okay, we're just going to move it over here. Like where the promotion is actually giving you the option. And what if Stipe didn't flinch, didn't hesitate, did go right in there with Tom? The reason I say that is we were at this same venue, right? This fight's going to be in November. So by the time that comes around, November of last year, 1 year prior, in the exact same spot where John did not come. And there was a backup fighter. His name was Sergey Pavlich, but it wasn't even offered to Stipe. In fact, we were told that would be disrespectful to offer to Stipe because it would have been an interim championship. Now it's the exact same, except instead of going against the non-champion for the interim title, you're going against the interim champion for the interim title. But same, right? So wouldn't that be something? Because Stipe never turned down Sergey Pavlich. He was never offered Tom, but he was never even put in that position. Dana made that clear. I didn't come here to take Stipe and John. I'm going to do that another time. And it would be an incredible case of irony if it turns out Stipe's answer and attitude would have been and is still sure. So that just right there, I would find interesting, but it's the concept of asking the question in the first place. How did we get here? Like, one thing that has never been identified for us, and what does it mean to be the backup fighter? What does that mean? But it's kind of important that we understand that. Like, it's a new regularity, a new built-in function. Diego Lopez just had a tremendous victory. Had a tremendous amount of attention, and when his opportunity to campaign for what's next, he actually lobbied to be the backup fighter for Topuria and Max, which he finally got done, and a whole press release and announcement was made. It was a big deal. If we don't know what that means, how is it a big deal? How was an announcement made? How are we announcing something? What would that mean to announce something that doesn't come with a definition? Are you with me? So I've always thought, though I must admit, no one actually told me it, and now it's looking as though I thought wrong. I always thought if you had a backup fighter, the two principals have already agreed. That's already been discussed. It's already been negotiated. I don't know how else you could sign one of the contracts. Like, I don't know how the backup fighter would say, does he change? Well, if I get this guy, then it's this participation. If I get this guy, it's this. Or is it very clear, no, you're a backup, you, there's no, here's what, okay, great. I'm just wondering, is that how that works? And then if you do have said backup fighter and everybody accepts that that is the backup fighter, but when it's time to call upon the backup fighter, you've now got to go in and renegotiate and retalk to somebody, which largely did get tested last year at the Garden. Sergey Pavlich was the backup fighter. He ended up fighting that night. Stipe Miocic was a principal fighter. He was there that night, as close to the cage as you could possibly get without being in it. But not only did they not get matched up, it wasn't even offered. So my thought about it's already been discussed in the unlikely event that we get here must not have been. So if it's a question of would Stipe fight Tom, then it's also a question of would John fight Tom. And if it's a question of would John fight Tom in the absence of Stipe, or would Stipe fight Tom in the absence of John, then we really don't have a backup fighter. We don't have a match at all. And I don't think that that's the correct answer either. I think that that interpretation would also be wrong. Then what is it? What does it mean? Is that a one-way negotiation? Which is another option. Might make sense based on the evidence that we have. Is it a one-way negotiation where the person, right now we're talking about Tom, we're also discussing Diego Lopez. That person has agreed and has worked something out with the organization, but the organization still has to do its other side. Is that all that it means? Is that all that it is? Hey, you're ready, you're on standby, and instead of just quietly doing that, we're going to alert you now so that there's a full training camp. And like all fighters, when the day actually comes that we're going to give you something that you've begged for and told the world you want, you don't then go, oh, I'm not ready for it. Like, is that all that gets achieved here? We take away one excuse from the world's biggest excuse makers, which are cage fighters. Is that the intent and goal? And I'm simply asking the question. It would seem like a very strange thing to ask. I mean, I wouldn't think that I would need to ask that question, but including of Stipe. If you have Tom, and that's a backup fighter on this date, and there's a championship on the line, like if everything is the same, what would be the surprise? Where would the no come from? If the answer is no, I feel like we should know now, because that would also mean that Tom is not the backup fighter. Just purely by proxy of definition. And we tested this. Today it's on Stipe, but for the last 2 weeks, it's been on John. Could it be John and Tom? But if that isn't something that's already agreed to, it's only been agreed to by Tom, that we really don't have a backup fighter. So we would then be left in a double-edged, confusing situation, believing, okay, that interim champion, if nothing else, makes you next. We have the ability to eliminate that, and being the backup fighter would make you next. We got a guy that's both in one, and we're having a discussion of whether that could be activated. And we're being told, yeah, I think we could get that done. But I think we could get that done versus we have a guy in the event of is not the same statement. In fact, they're largely opposite statements. So what does it mean to be a backup fighter if it doesn't mean you will fill in for the guy that's hurt? If it doesn't mean that, what does it mean? All right, everybody, that's it for today's episode. Thank you for listening. And if you enjoyed what you heard today, I implore you to tell me what you think of the show by leaving me a review on Apple Podcasts and submitting a rating on Spotify. I'm off to Salt Lake for UFC 307. So the next time you hear from me, it will be inside feeding you scoops going on in Salt Lake City. Thank you for listening, everybody. Until next time, I'm Chael Sonnen, and you are welcome.